nearby state to like the time of my dog.
So meeting of the Senate Finance Committee will please come to order. It is May 9, 2011, and our first bill up on the agenda is Senator Jungbauer, Senate File 54, the claims bill. Welcome, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's good to be here on this lovely day. First, Madam Chair and members, I have an A11 amendment to get the bill in the shape we need it in for the final numbers.
Senator Olson, do you want to move the A11 amendment?
Be happy to. Thank you.
Senator Olson moves the A11 amendment. Is there discussion on the amendment? Do you want to do any clarification, or what did you change?
Thank you.
I'll have Mr. Lindeke explain what we changed in the bill.
Madam Chair, my name's Craig Lindeke from the Reviser of Statutes Office. I'm the counsel to the Claims Subcommittee, and as usual this year, I had the senators introduce a placeholder claims bill, which only had the one claim in it that last year's Claims Subcommittee had decided in November. So after we had our April 15th meeting with Senator Jungbauer and Representative Smith co-chairing that, I put in to it this delete everything amendment. All of the claims that were agreed to pay at the April 15th meeting. So that's what this is. This would be the complete claims bill. The other was just a placeholder.
And Senator Jungbauer, this is your first stop, so it's like an author's amendment. It's a delete all that has all of the claims in it. Senator Olson has moved it. Do members have any questions? If not, all in favor of the A11 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion is approved. The amendment is adopted. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 54 is the annual claims bill, as Mr. Lindeke said, and it's representing the work of our subcommittee on the claims that came up this past year. The bill appropriates $60,806.29 from the general fund to two state agencies to pay 14 claims and to reimburse the Department of Corrections for claims already paid. Section 1 appropriates $59,683.29 to the Department of Corrections, including $350 directly to the MCF Rush City to reimburse the facility for a claim it paid. Paragraph A reimburses Department of Corrections for sentence to service and community work service claims under $500 and other claims it has already paid. Paragraph B reimburses the MCF Rush City for payment it made to Walter S. Rood at the direction of the Subcommittee on Claims. Paragraph C, D, E, F, H, I, J, K, and N provide for payments to persons injured while performing their sentence to service work and to medical providers for treatment of those persons. Paragraphs G, L, and M provide for payments to persons permanently injured while performing assigned duties in the Minnesota correctional facilities. Section 2, the Department of Revenue appropriates $1,123 to the Department of Revenue to pay Renee S. Johnson the amount of an expired property tax refund check she failed to cash due to medical reasons and to refund her filing fee. So, Madam Chair and members, the total appropriations from the general fund are from the Department of Corrections or to the Department of Corrections in paid out in fiscal year 2012, $59,683.29. And for fiscal year 11, $1,123 even. And Madam Chair and members, the reason for the appropriation to Renee Johnson out of the fiscal year 2011, members, she has some financial needs, and we decided to move that one into fiscal year 2011. Members, that really represents the claims bill. It's for those of you that haven't seen claims bill, it's actually smaller than what we've seen in the past due to a lot of issues, but that represents the complete agreed to claims.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Jungbauer. I'm looking at L and M, and it seems to me that all these other sentenced to serve injuries were kind of two parts, one to the person who got injured and one to pay for medical treatment. And these two don't have the medical treatment part.
They are in, they're in okay. Prison, so the medical care is already taken care of.
Madam Chair and members, I remember him fairly well from the committee meeting, but I wanted to make sure with Mr. Lindeke that I knew what I was saying. But members, these folks are actually incarcerated. Their medical care is paid for by the facility, and these were permanent injuries, and these are paid out based on the work comp chart of a permanent disability suffered.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Higgins.
So the other sentence to serve workers who were injured were not incarcerated?
Senator Jumbo.
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, that is correct. And so we these are represent the medical bills paid for injuries while on the sentence to serve.
Senator Jungbauer, with all of the sentence to serve injuries, what kind of injuries are they sustaining when they're doing this? I mean, are a lot of them out picking up trash along the highway, or what sort of jobs are they doing that they're getting injured?
Madam Chair and members, anything from doing some roofing job, I remember one gentleman falling off a roof and having some minimal medical injuries, but we don't know long-term how that'll be. Somebody straining their back from moving wood, different cleanups, small cuts. And Mr. Lindeke could probably remember a few other ones.
One of the most severe, Madam Chair, is Mr. Burciaga, I think. He's the first one on the list here, Mario Burciaga. And he had most of one finger, pretty much all of one finger, chopped off by a wood chipper. So they have them out in the park. He was working in Sakata State Park, which is south of the Twin Cities. I guess I saw it not too long ago. And
it's out of Faribault.
He was working in there with brush. He was working on the wood chipper, and his finger got chopped off. Several of the others had trees fall on them, on their heads, as other people were chopping down the trees. One had a ladder on him from a truck. There are all kinds of injuries, Madam Chair, Senator Higgins.
Does anyone else have questions?
I'll move the bill.
Senator Higgins moves Senate File 54. Is there anyone in the audience who wanted to testify for or against the bill? If not, Senator Higgins renews her motions that Senate File 54 be recommended
as amended.
Be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail.
Madam Chair, in the past I've appeared at the Finance Committee a couple of times where whoever was the chair of the Finance Committee said, oh, this is Mr. Lindeke's last claims bill. He's retiring. Well, I didn't, and I didn't, and I didn't. And I actually got two rounds of applause on the House floor for my retirement, and I'm still here. But what I want you all to know, and worked with Senator Higgins on the claims subcommittee, and Senator Hahn, and actually Senator Goodwin, who presented a claim to the claims subcommittee on somebody's behalf. This actually will be my last claims bill. I am retiring June 30th after 35 years at the legislature. So this is the last one.
Well, Mr. Lindeke, thank you. Thank you for your many years of service, and we hope you enjoy your retirement very much.
So too.
Thank you.
What a guy. He keeps more stuff in his hand than all that.
The next bill on our agenda is Senate File 288, Senator Howe.
Yeah.
Good morning, Senator Howell.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I do have a Senate File 288. I do have a printed change that I'd like to make and also an oral amendment to it. Some technical clerical errors in the bill that need to be addressed.
Does everyone have the Senate File 288 written amendment? I understand there are a few additional corrections to it, so before we adopt it, could we maybe incorporate those into it?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. First, if we wanted to look at line 2.10.
So this is on the bill itself?
On the bill itself.
2.10.
So you know what? Could I get the page to bring me a copy of the printed? When it references Chapter 150, it should be 150A, not 150B.
Not seeing that.
I think we'll have Senate Counsel address that. Because on 210, I don't see it referencing that.
Madam Chair and Senator Howell, we reviewed a different copy of the bill earlier, and I'm not sure if you had the first engrossment at that time. It looks like the reference that you're concerned about may have been taken care of.
Taken care of, all right. Well, then I'm wondering if I'm working off the old language here. Do I have a copy of the new?
The first engrossment? Okay.
All right, yeah, sounds good. Thanks. I think Senate Counsel will walk through it then.
Okay. Mr. Bodden, can you help us out?
Madam Chair, I think there's some additional language in the document that Senator Howe showed me before the hearing that we will need to incorporate in an amendment. There are some smaller changes made to that, but we're going to need a little time to put this into writing.
So perhaps we should lay this on the table for a little bit, and we could take up our next bill while that is happening.
That sounds great.
Is Senator Dahms in here? Is Senator Dahms here? Go to Ingebertson.
Need to do some work on the language, so I think we're going to move aside for a bit.
He's too busy.
Okay.
Senator Dames, we were able to move you up on the agenda. We had to table the bill prior, so hopefully you're not too rushed and ready to go.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Today I am here to introduce Senate File 1244. Senate File 1244 is a bill that's relating to the environment, modifying the Wetland Conservation Act, providing for state environment permitting coordination and management, modifying certain environmental review procedures, and authorizing consumptive use of water, requiring some rulemaking. With me today as testifiers, we should have somebody from the Bowser, John Jasky, or Julie Blackburn should be here. We have Tony from the Chamber, and then from Lyon County, we'll have Paul Hendricks and Denny Seams. To start with, if somebody from Bowser is here, I would like to have them come forward.
Madam Chair?
Senator Magnus.
Madam Chair, I would move that we pass Senate File 1244.
Senator
the
Magnus.
The motion before us, do we hear the bill?
Senator Magnus moves Senate File 1244, and then we'll continue our discussion on it. Did you say you had some people who wanted to testify, Senator Dames?
I don't believe they're here yet. They were going to be here at noon, so I apologize. I don't believe that somebody from the Bowser is here at this point. As I understand, there is an amendment. So maybe if they want to handle that amendment at this point, Madam Chair.
Oh. Okay. Madam Chair, that might be my amendment.
Senator Higgins.
And Madam Chair, it's just oral. It's on page 10.
On page 10.
Lines 16, 17, and 18, there are some. There's a deleted sentence. And we had a discussion about this in Environment Committee, and I think people have been having further discussions between that committee and here. And we think that it would be best if we put this sentence back in. And I see Mr. Quillis from the Chamber is here to talk about it. And I think Senator Dames is, I shouldn't speak for him. I think he's on board with this.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, that was on page...
Page 10, the sentence that starts on line 16.
Yes. And we would be willing to accept that language to be put back in. Madam Chair.
Senator Higgins, did you want to explain it, or did we want someone to testify to it?
Mr. Quillis.
Madam Chair,
sure
members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Senator Higgins is correct. This amendment was put on in the Senate Environment Committee. And through some conversations with Senator Dames and Senator Higgins, who had some questions about it, we've agreed to reinstate the stricken language that she has mentioned on lines 10.16 to 10.18.
And Senator Dames is comfortable with that amendment?
Yes, I would accept that change in the language, Madam Chair.
Is there any further discussion on Senator Higgins' motion to
reinstate
the stricken language on 10.16 to 10.18, Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dames, will this extend any process? I mean, are we, by adding this back in, are we extending any process by a number of hours or days or weeks?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Perry, no, it's an existing process right now, and we're going to keep having some ongoing conversations with some interested stakeholders, including the Pollution Control Agency, but we don't see it as adding any more time that's already on there right now.
Thank you.
Any further questions about the amendment? If not, on Senator Higgins' oral amendment affecting line 10.16 to 10.18 to reinstate the stricken language, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Is there another amendment, Senator James?
Yes. Yes, there is another amendment. I believe Senator Ingebrigtsen is carrying that amendment. Is that correct?
So Senator Ingebrigtsen will move the A9 amendment.
The A9.
So move.
An explanation on the amendment?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I think I'll explain it for Senator James. The first, what you see on page one, the new section four, this has been added. This is being added to the bill. It's for project-specific wetland replacement completed prior to wetland impacts. They can use both the Great Lakes and Rainy River watershed basins and treat it as one basin for the wetland replacement ratios. This is because they're right on the border, and it allows them to use on both sides. But it's only for a permit to mine. So that's section four. That's being added to the bill. Now, that actually goes all the way through page four of the amendment. And this section was being replaced. It simplifies there was already a simplification of the wetland replacement siting in the bill. This simplifies it even further. And basically make sure that how these wetlands are treated between 50 to 80% area and a less than 50% area, allowing them to be treated in areas that have fewer of their pre-settlement wetlands in place. And again, it's really more of a simplification of the whole siting process and how wetland replacements are sited, especially through a wetland banking program. And then, Madam Chair, you'll also see there's a page six of the amendment. You'll see that there's some new language in this paragraph E. I think that was actually in the original bill, though. And then there's also deleting section eight from the bill, dealing with local appeals. That's being deleted from the bill. And then section 13 is being replaced. The big difference here is the sentence on 6.29 to 6.30. See, what the original bill did was expand the ability to use the preservation of wetlands in these areas with greater than 80% of their pre-settlement wetlands to use those for wetland credit. This is being expanded to go beyond ones that are owned by state and local governments. But what 6.29 to 6.30, that sentence does, it says that if it's already been protected, if the area has been protected on private lands by a conservation easement acquired with public money, this section does not apply. So it's carving that back from the expansion of this to private lands.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 8, the local appeals that's being removed with this amendment, does the local appeals language from current law then remain in the bill or in the statute?
Madam Chair, yes. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
This is a pretty major amendment in Finance Committee, and I'm just wondering if there's anybody here who wants to speak for or against it.
Madam Chair, Tony Quillis again for the Director of Environmental Policy. Under in the Senate Environment Committee, this was still kind of a work in progress. Senator Ingebrigtsen tasked a number of people to go through and kind of keep working on this language. Under the leadership of Senator Ingebrigtsen, Senator Saxhog, Senator Bach, the Chamber, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, the Builders Association of Minnesota, and the Iron Mining Association have reached an agreement on the consensus on this language.
Do members have any further questions? Senator Olson?
Well, Madam Chair, I'd have to swallow awfully hard to support this with all the words impacted brought into the language, including using impact as a verb. You have impacted wisdom teeth, but this is it's bad language. I know we've fallen into that trap, and I'm very sorry to see that. It's affected. It's the proper word, and you're changing all of that to impacted, and I don't like it. I want to go on record.
Move to
Vote no.
Any other comments on the A9 amendment?
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Higgins?
And I apologize, but I still don't have a clue what this does. And Mr. Kulas talked about a lot of people who seemed to get together, but were there any environmental voices in that group? I heard the mines, I heard the chamber, I heard a whole lot of people. Were there any non-business related people who were at the table when you were putting this together?
Mr. Kulas?
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, the Board of Water and Soil Resources was kind of the point lead on this. I personally, unfortunately, was not involved in any of the actual negotiations themselves. I mean, Senator Roebling, the chair, has asked if there's other people to comment. I suppose they could if they need to.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Higgins?
Along Senator Olson's comment, why did you change affected to impacted?
Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, it wasn't my idea. This was the original affected were my idea to begin with, but the board in their rules uses the word impacted throughout. And so they want to change it back to, they want to have the statute reflect how they do it in their rules. Again, I think the word affected is a better choice of word too, but for some reason, and I agree with Senator Olson that impacted to me is something wedged between two things like a wisdom tooth, but that's the term of art that the board uses, and they wanted to change it in the statute to reflect the way they use it.
Clearly, there were no English majors in the group.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson,
it's a term of poor usage.
Yes,
it speaks to bureaucratic gobbledygook, and I do object.
Senator Bonoff,
thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to the stricken language on page 5 and the effect that it has in the 7-county metro area, was there some consult with folks in the metro area, and is there agreement on that part of this amendment?
Senator Dames?
Madam Chair, and if we could repeat the question.
Senator Bonoff, would you repeat that?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to the stricken language on page 5 of the amendment, 5.19 through 5.29, and that it affects the 7-county metro area, I was wondering if somebody from the 7-county metro area had some views on this. Were they supportive of that? Were they consulted in this process?
Madam Chair, Senator Bonhoff, I would refer that to Julie Blackburn from the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Ms. Blackburn?
Thank you. Madam Chair and Senator Bonhoff, as far as this language, the changes that we made were, we consulted with a whole lot of different groups and representatives from different areas of the state. And what we tried to accomplish by the deletion of this
language.
Excuse
me, Madam Chair. Could we just give this testifier just a second to catch her breath? Because I can tell she's struggling here. She ran all the way here to get here early. So I'm just going to talk to you, Madam Chair, just for a second, so she can take a few deep breaths.
No better guy to waste time.
You know, and we could talk about the weather outside, Madam Chair, and how it's rainy and probably 65 degrees. But just for her sake, I'd rather than her having to struggle to explain this, I think it would be better.
Thank you, Senator Perry. I noticed when she started to speak that she must have dashed over here in a hurry. And give her a few moments to catch her breath. I know what it's like when you run upstairs.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Perry.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it was quite a distance, actually. So as far as our elimination of it under this section, what we try to do is work with everybody that was involved in order to create a system where all areas are treated based on the watershed approach. So we have consistent treatment statewide. Everywhere you go in the state with these changes, the prioritization will be the same as far as how you go about finding your wetland replacement sites.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the language, we had a little bit of discussion about the language before you came, and they wanted to know some of the members were concerned about changing the words affected to impacted, but it's my understanding in the dealings and long history I've had in dealing as a farmer with the with the federal government that that's the language they use is impacted wetlands. It's a federal term. So Senator Olson can lecture the federal Congress in using inappropriate English language for hopeless. Yeah.
Senator Newman.
Hopeless. Thank you, Madam Chair. My question, and I don't even know who to ask this question of, but if we go to page 6 of the amendment, lines 611 through 615, it looks to me like there is a board, and I don't know which board we're dealing with, is going to prepare comprehensive inventories, and I don't know what those are. And it's mandatory that applicants and local government units abide by whatever this board decides without a right of recourse. And so my questions are, what board are we talking about? What are the inventories that they're talking about? And am I reading this correctly that local units of government and applicants have no choice but to accept that recommendation or the board-approved inventories?
Ms. Blackburn.
Madam Chair and Senator Newman, as far the board would be the board that I work for, the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Okay. So that's a board of 20. They're appointed by the governor but include the commissioners or commissioner appointees for Department of Ag, DNR, PCA, and Health. There's also representatives on there from the units of government that are the LGU authorities for WACA, including SWCDs, counties, watershed districts. And then there's also citizens on that board. This is really looking at up in the northeastern portion of the state, finding acceptable areas to put in wetland replacement credits is extremely difficult because there's already so many wetlands there. And so we were directed, the board was directed in 2007 to do a comprehensive inventory for that area, and we were given an appropriation to do so. And what the goal is, in the other language on the replacement siting, as far as the priorities of where you find the siting, what we're trying to do there is make sure every time you go through finding an appropriate replacement site, if you always have a dead end every single time you look in your watershed, if you always have a dead end every single time you look in the wetland bank service area, that we try to actually quicken the process for people that are going through this process by doing a comprehensive inventory, having it approved by our board, and that way we can get rid of a couple of those steps that are always repeated to the same dead end. It's getting them to the result of finding their replacement site quicker. As far as anything under WACA being appealed or having any ability to affect a decision, almost every single thing under the Wetland Conservation Act is appealable either at the local level or to the board. So we believe that by going through this process, we're developing a comprehensive approach to find the best replacement sites, bringing it to our board, which is, includes representatives from all those local units of government, and there is still an opportunity for people to appeal any decision.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, on that, is there an inventory and assessment thing? What is it, a report, a something or another, for every area of the state?
Ms. Blackburn.
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, there is not yet. We would not approve any, obviously, until they were done, and it would depend on if there are areas like in the Northeast where it's just extremely difficult. Obviously, that was a special circumstance. But there may be areas in the metro where it's also very difficult because of development to find a good wetland replacement site in the immediate area. So it would be up to either the local unit of government or possibly joint powers units of government to say, let's do a study, work with Bowser on that, get it approved so that we can have a faster process for finding replacement sites. So it doesn't exactly say who is going to do the study or where it comes from as far as the initiation of it, but what it says is that it has to go through this board approval process. And so what we'll be doing if this goes forward is setting up criteria that we are going to find necessary in order to approve an inventory.
So,
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, how long do you think it will take before there's an assessment for all areas of the state?
Ms. Blackburn.
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, we my understanding of this is that we aren't going to systematically begin doing this throughout the state. Obviously, in the southwestern part of the state, there are ample opportunities for wetland replacement. We're really going to be looking at where are the needs, where are they having an extremely difficult time finding appropriate wetland replacement sites, and then we'll be working with those local units of government to try to facilitate that. So there is no plan strategy to go statewide. There are some areas where it certainly isn't necessary because there's plenty of sites available. We'll be looking at it really on a as-requested-as-needed basis.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Higgins.
But we have in here that as of, sometime later this year, you would be required to rely on these comprehensive inventories. And if they don't exist, what are you going to do? And how do we put something in law that you can't comply with?
Ms. Blackburn.
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, that's only the last resort. They're still first required to, on the bottom of page 4, subdivision 3 of section 5, they still are required to go through first the series of prioritizations. And in most cases throughout the state, it's this series of prioritizations where you're going to find your replacement site. It's only in those areas where you're bumping up against that you can't find a suitable site, as is right now in the Northeast, where we have this study we're going to look at adopting, and possibly some of the areas of the metro where it's going to be used. But other than that, most areas of the state, there are appropriate replacement sites found with this prioritization of where you look first.
Further questions on the amendment? If not, Senator Ingebertson has moved the A9 amendment. Is there anyone else who wanted to testify on it? Otherwise, he renews his motion that the A9 amendment be recommended to pass. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay.
Nay.
The amendment is adopted. Senator Dames, do you want to continue with the explanation? Senator Perry?
Madam Chair, I think the Sergeant of Arms should remove that person at
Harvard. It was the revolt of the English majors.
Yeah.
Love it.
Senator Dames, do you want to continue, or do we want to go to the fiscal note?
Madam Chair, if we could continue, Julie Blackburn has a couple of other comments, and then I'd like to have a couple of other testifiers on the bill. So if we could go ahead, I would appreciate it.
Okay. And we are going to focus mainly on the fiscal impacts, but as I always say here, we have to pass this whole bill out, not just part of it, so we do want to understand it.
Madam Chair, what would be your choice in the way to do it? It makes me no difference. If you wanted to do the fiscal impact part of it first, that's fine.
No,
whatever
Ms.
works for you.
Ms. Blackburn may go ahead. She's at the table.
Of course
here.
You can.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to, put a couple comments out there that we've been working on this bill now for well over a year, and our way of going about this is to really try to make sure that we get a lot of interest in what we're doing, because the Wetland Conservation Act tends to be very controversial, and so we work with a lot of different interest groups on this to make sure that we have a resolution, and we're really pleased with what we have here and believe that it's been well supported by all different types of interest groups, and I really think that this is a great portion of this bill, and we're pretty pleased with what it's going to do as far as streamlining the ability for wetland replacement still to remain high quality but be done faster and better, and it doesn't really result in any fiscal impact for Bowser, and so we appreciate that.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. Any additional questions for her, Senator Goodwin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if you also support Section 18 on page 13, consumptive use of water.
Madam Chair and Senator, we have not taken a position on that, and quite frankly, I haven't been able to focus very much on that specific portion because I've been working on ours. So the Board of Water and Soil Resources has not taken a position on that.
Okay.
Senator Goodwin.
Madam Chair, then I don't know if this is appropriate time, but I haven't had a chance to talk to Senator Dames about this, but I've been getting quite a few concerns about this particular section. So I understand that you know, that what's happening here is that one particular business is going to be allowed to withdraw up to 200 million gallons of water annually from the Poplar River. And that's of concern to people because of the potential for threatening aquatic life and trout in the steelhead fisheries, which are entirely dependent on the surface water, and this provision would also prevent the DNR from regulating that and in that withdrawal of up to 200 million gallons. So could you explain to me, appears to be 2 million gallons per day, averaging in a 30-day period, which would be 60 million gallons in a month and up to 200 million gallons in a year out of this river. So can you explain to me why you're, and maybe I'd like to hear from somebody in the DNR as well on this particular issue.
Madam Chair and Senator Goodwin, it's my understanding that this has been going on for years, that they've been taking water out of this. I believe it's a stream that they've been taking the water out of. However, I have a gentleman here that would like to testify about this taking the water from this stream. So I will turn it over to this gentleman here.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Jeremy Essenson with Leonard Street and Dynard here on behalf of Lewdson Mountain Resort. Senator Goodwin, the question you had specifically about the quantity of water, well, maybe I'll just hit on a couple of the highlights. So Lewdson Resort has been using water from the Poplar River to make snow for 50 years now, just over 50 years. And they consumed more as the business grew. And for the last 9 years, they've been working with the DNR, not very successfully, to get a permit that accurately reflects the amount of water required to make snow. And Lewdson brought this to Senator Bach's attention, and he asked that we try to work out some sort of a legislative solution. What we're having some trouble with is the fact that this is a designated trout stream, and in fact there's a great deal of trout fishing upstream from the mountain. We're talking about the last about 2.5 miles of the river from the lake up to the top where they start acquiring water, and that's about a 1,000-foot vertical drop between the lake and that upper area. The reason I bring that up is because the water there is very fast and turbulent and not very conducive to fish living in that portion of the stream. In fact, in the 60s, the resort tried to stock that area, but found that they weren't able to do so. And it subsequently did a study and found out that many of the microorganisms necessary for trout to thrive aren't existent in that portion of the stream. Now, there is a fishery at the mouth of the river, right near the lake, about the last 200 yards or so from Highway 61 to the lake, and Lewdson has indicated their willingness to ensure that there's proper water flow there by pumping water back to just after the waterfall by the highway. Excuse me, Madam Chair, I'm struggling with a little bit of cold, but as far as the quantity of water, I think it's also important to point out that while that is a large number, in November and December, when they use the most of the water, there's about a 50 million gallon flow per day in November and about 35 million in December. So while those are large numbers, they're relatively small in comparison with the total amount moving through there.
Madam Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
That sounds like quite a bit. If there's 50,000 50 million a day, 50 million a day, and you can take 20 million a day out of it. I guess could I please have the DNR? I mean, I'm wondering. This doesn't seem to fit with quite a bit of the rest of the bill. I'm wondering if the DNR could get the DNR's opinion on this piece. I'm asking Senator Dames Madam Chair, could we get the DNR to just comment on this, please?
Madam Chair, Senator Goodwin, that would be fine if the DNR wants to comment. That's fine.
Senator Dames, is someone from the DNR here to testify on this?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Steve Hirsch, Director of Ecological and Water Resources Division for DNR. And this is a permit that has been ongoing for a long time, but we've, as Mr. Estenson mentioned, we have been working with Lewdson to try to get them out of this water source. This is not a good place to be taking water from. particularly in the amounts that they're talking about. It is a trout stream, and the North Shore streams do see typically see low flow conditions in the winter and the summer months because they're dependent on surface drainage. Brook trout, which are in the stream in the reach just below the intake, they actually are fall spawners, and so their eggs are incubating in the stream over the winter. And as a result, the streams up there in the North Shore are somewhat present somewhat hostile conditions for trout, even in their natural state. But when you're appropriating water from them, that just exacerbates the condition. So we've been working with Lutzen for a long time to try to get them to utilize Lake Superior water. We think that's a much better and more sustainable long-term source of water for them. The provision, particularly at in the last part of the section that says that the water may be taken. Excuse me just a
without
second.
Without regard. Madam Chair, it's
water may be taken
without regard.
Without regard to minimum flow or water level requirements is right. Particularly problematic. I mean, this would result in a trout stream not even getting the same protection that we give our warm water streams when irrigators appropriate water out of there. So we think that that provision is certainly problematic, and we really like to see some sort of sunset provision in here so that there's an incentive for Lutzen to get out of this water source eventually. Right now, with the way the bill's worded, there's no incentive for them to go anywhere else from the trout stream. They can have more water than they've already been taking, even in their highest years, and without regard to flow and with no sunset provision.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, first, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Hurst. How long have you been working with Lutzen on this? I understand this has been going on for some time. How many initiatives has the DNR brought forward to try and resolve this over the last years? I guess
Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, you're correct. It's been going on for a long time. I don't know how many separate initiatives we've brought forward. Obviously, we have not enforced the conditions on the permit. We've been trying to be reasonable and work with them, but we have let it go on for a long time.
Madam Chair, in light of this, I'd like to do an oral amendment to delete Section 18 from 13.14 to 13.23, and perhaps it can get worked out somehow and be reworded for a different bill, but I think this is a pretty dramatic change and possibly will create problems for both the fishery and for trout fishing and It's given them pretty wide range here, especially when they have a secondary water source that they could use. So I guess I would like to offer that amendment. Sorry I didn't get a chance to talk to you about the Senator Dams before this, but I just found out about it through some emails that I received and people really concerned about this, and both anglers and people, environmental people that have property up there. So I really would like to try to delete this for now, and perhaps somebody can work on it and come back with some other solution.
Mr. Esteson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to point out two other things quickly. In the 50 years of water use for snowmaking, Lutzen's worked closely with adjoining landowners. And to this date, they're not aware of any concerns or complaints. And specifically with the fishery at the mouth of the lake, the resort has visited with those folks and indicated their willingness to come up with some sort of a solution. Madam Chair, the largest concern we have is that, as DNR has suggested, using the lake as a water supply would be a great idea. We would like it too, but it's going to cost in the neighborhood of $3.5 to $4 million to do so. And so it's simply been cost prohibitive at this point.
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, and sir, I didn't catch your name, but how many years has the resort been in violation of its permit by drawing the water out of this trout stream?
Mr. Esteson.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, I'm unsure how many years.
Mr. Hirsch from the DNR, how many years have they been in violation?
Mr. Hirsch.
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, according to the water level or the water withdrawal information I have, they've been exceeding the level that's allowed in their permit at least the last 10 years.
So, Madam Chair,
Senator Higgins,
if the resort had, started paying for pulling this water out of Lake Superior 10 years ago,
and not just gone ahead and violated their permit for the last at least 10 years. You know, their costs would have been substantially less, would be my guess, than what they are now. But I don't think we should just approve of bad behavior. You know, this resort has been in violation for at least 10 years that the department knows about. And all we would be doing with this section in the bill would be saying, oh, yeah, fine, go ahead. I guess we really don't care about, you know, the state's waters. And I don't think that's the message we need to send out to our state. So I agree with Senator Goodman's amendment.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I would argue, how long haven't you done your job? If we want to get that way, Senator Higgins, then let's ask the other side, how long have they not done their job? They're as much at fault as the other side. So let's not pick on one and leave the other go unscathed, because they're not doing their job. And the problem is the DNR has the initiative to do and enforce and move forward. So they're as guilty as the other party, and I just want that to be known when we move forward here. We can't just pick on one and not the other.
Mr. Hirsch.
Madam Chair and Senator Perry, you know, that's a fair point, and I don't think that we've handled this the best. I would be the first to admit that, but I just don't think the solution in going forward is to give Lutz and carte blanche to take as much water as they want out of the stream without some reasonable limits on that. I mean, when we have agricultural irrigators and they you know, their livelihood depends on taking water too, you know, they're subject to minimum flow requirements, and when we get into periods of drought or extremely dry weather, they have to limit their appropriations too. So I don't know why we would want to treat a trout stream differently. At least that, and the statute actually says that at least as of 1977, there are to be no more water appropriations from trout streams except on a temporary basis. So I really think we need to find a better – I agree that the DNR has not done the best job with regard to this issue, but I really think we need to find a better resolution.
Well, Mr. Hirsch, the question I have is, if this has been going on for 10 years and there's still trout in the stream, how do we know that this process has degraded the trout stream at all? If there's still trout there, how do we know that it would be better if it didn't happen?
Madam Chair, that's an excellent question. And the fact is, we don't know, because the water withdrawal has been going on for so long, we don't have a baseline to compare what we've got there now. The trout numbers in that reach are not high. It's probably not the type of stream that's ever going to have extremely high numbers of trout. But taking water out of it in the winter, when you've already often have very limiting low flow conditions, could very well be limiting that population. And the other thing that I would point out is the lower portion of that stream, as Mr. Estenson referred to, is a very unique portion of stream that gets a pretty good steelhead run and also has coaster brook trout, which have become very rare in Lake Superior. So again, because this withdrawal has been going on for so long, we can't say what the answer to your question is, but the science would tell you that this is just not a good time of year to be taking water out of these streams.
Well, Mr. Hirsch, how much water have they been pulling out? Is this substantially more if we permit 2 million gallons per day?
Madam Chair, in the last 10 years, when they have been exceeding their permit, according to our records, they've been pulling somewhere between, at least according to the records that we've got from the permit, somewhere between 60 million and a little less than 110 million gallons a year. So I think the largest we've seen have been the last 2 years, 2009 and 2010, and I believe it was like 108 and 109 million gallons, or 107, 108 million gallons.
So Madam Chair. Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know. This is just why wouldn't, if it's going to cost $3.5 million to help this company out, and being that we have an economic development tool that I think would just be appropriate for this, why wouldn't we look at the IRRRB to fund a project like this? I mean, it's my understanding that whole fund is for economic development. And so, I mean, this whole thing, you know, I would agree with you, Senator Goodwin. If we could get the funds out of the IRRRB to fund the piping or whatever it takes to get the money out of this lake, why wouldn't we do that? Because that's economic development. Makes sense to me.
And certainly that could be looked at. But my whole question is, why would we do it at all if it's not going to have, if it's not going to change anything or improve anything? Why would you spend $3.5 million? And I don't know that there's an indication that it would substantially improve the trout population in the stream. I don't know. How much is a trout worth? I mean, say you get 100 more per year. I don't know.
$29.50 at the restaurant.
Madam Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't think it's just the idea of whether or not what the value of the trout is, but any aquatic species are a danger when there's not enough. There's not enough water, surface water. And if you're talking $200 million versus what they're currently have been using as $100 million, I think we're really taking a chance here that there's going to be more significant problems. And I really just think that maybe the DNR and Senator Dames. And the people from Lutzen can work on this, but I don't think we should let this out of this committee this way. So I would really encourage support for this amendment. Hopefully they can come to the floor with an amendment that will satisfy, you know, will change it, but to suddenly go up to 200 million gallons when they've only been using half or less of that, or at least that's what they've been estimating it at, I think is really a significant leap. And I would hope we'd protect our waters a little better than that. And it's not just about Lutzen. It's about a number of other tourist industries that are in that area as well, and anglers and so forth. So I think, you know, we're making a special consideration for one resort area when the whole area is tourist heavy. And I definitely agree with Senator Perry that the IRRRB should be looked at for this money, and I don't know whether it has by Lutzen or not, but I would definitely think that that would be a good resolution. But could we please just take it out of here now and then go on to see what they can work out rather than letting it go like this? That would be my request.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if it was discussed here. I was best stepping in the back of the room, but the golf course is drawing water from the lake right now. And maybe the DNR knows the history there. How long ago did that happen? Has the golf course ever drawn water out of this creek in the past? And if so, can you give us the history of that? Maybe you did. I'm sorry if I missed it.
Mr. Hirsch?
Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, the golf course does now draw water out of the lake. I don't know if they started in the river. It seems to me I heard that they did, and then they moved to the lake, but that wasn't that long ago, but I'm just not sure about that.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Follow up on that. Can you give me an idea? Because I don't know, and I don't think members of the committee probably know, drawing water might be a mute point here, but drawing water for a golf course versus a snowmaking event, maybe the testifier can give us an idea. Are they similar amounts of money, of dollars? Excuse me, gallons of water?
Mr. Hirsch.
Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think the amount for the golf course is much less, but I don't have the exact amounts.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to back up just a little bit here. How many gallons a year are we currently drawing?
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, it's been in the neighborhood of 100 million gallons for the past few years.
Senator Perry?
Madam Chair, Senator Goodwin, I don't know. To me, I like this. I'm thinking, what if it was lowered to that 100 million? I'm trying to find a quick way to get them out of not being in compliance, yet force the issue that we take a look at this funding mechanism for economic development here. You follow me?
I do.
So that we don't have to worry about the enforcement side. So to me, maybe an amended motion that you would cap X amount of gallons, and even if you wanted to put a sunset on that for a couple of years or 4 years, so that there's time to work on that funding mechanism. It's just an idea. I just,
Senator Goodwin.
Madam Chair, and I guess I'd like the just the DNR's opinion on what that would do. I definitely agree that the sunset is a good idea, and that's certainly not going double of what they're already taking is also a good idea to stop that. So maybe perhaps I can ask if that sounds reasonable.
First, Senator Dames, did you want to comment?
Well, I wanted to make a couple of comments. First, I'm hearing some people saying we're giving these folks these specials and this and that and the next thing, and yet they've been taking water out of this stream for 40, 50 years. It's not like somebody starting a new business today and asking to do that. So we need to keep that in mind. There's some history that goes with this. The other thing is that I think the House bill, I think it's 150 million gallons a year. And as I understand it, line 1322 is some concern about the purpose. It says the purpose is without regard to the minimum flow. I would like to see this Section 18 kept in the bill probably as it is, and maybe we can work on a number similar to what the House has and work on some language there before it gets to the Senate floor. But at this point, I would not be in favor of the amendment as Senator Goodwin is proposing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Hirsch, did you have a comment?
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Goodwin, we would certainly view it as an improvement to have a $100 million gallon cap on that, and also, even more importantly, the sunset provision, because I think it really would help to move this along and get them out of the trout stream, which is what we need to do long term. The other thing, Senator Dames mentioned the House language. The House language does have provisions for a cutoff when flows reach the Q90 level or the flow that's exceeded 90% of the time, which is a low flow level, which we also think would be an improvement over the language that says without regard to flow or water level.
Senator Goodwin.
Madam Chair, for the purposes of trying to get along with everybody here, I would want to change my amendment from a delete all ban to a withdraw. We'll have to change the 2 million gallons per day in the 30-day period, but change it to 100 million gallons total. And put a sunset on it of
100 million.
Yeah, then it would be 1 million gallons per day would be the change from 2 million gallons per day in a 30-day period, and then 100 million. I would suggest also putting a period after purposes on line 22 and deleting without regard to minimum flow or water level requirements, at least if they go into the conference committee with the House with that language, they have something to work with to try to come up with at least a minimum flow requirement as long as the House bill has that in. If we leave it without regard to a minimum flow at all, that really leaves it pretty wide open, I think. So if we change it to 100 million and put a sunset date of two years from now, which would be August, if this bill becomes the day following final enactment. Well, let's just say August 1st of 2013.
Okay.
Does that make sense? That's quite a change from
Mr.
where
Bodern
I
has
started.
A suggestion.
Okay.
Madam Chair and Senator Goodwin, a couple of thoughts here. Mr. Knopf points out that the $2 million gallon a day limitation is actually something that's contained in statute. Leaving in would be consistent, I think, with what's authorized in Section 103G.265, Subdivision 3, which is referenced here. So, you may want to consult with the department about that. But if you want to do that, then the other way I'd suggest providing the expiration date would simply be to add language on page 13, line 15, before pursuant, insert until June 30th, 2013, comma, and then that would work with the rest of the sentence. And
okay.
Then I think the remainder of your amendment would be on page 13, line 21, to delete 200 million and insert 100 million.
Okay, Madam Chair,
Senator Goodwin.
And Mr. Bodern. So you're saying it's fine to leave the 2 million gallons per day, but limit the 200 million to 100 million, because then they can, does that make sense to everybody? Because they can still only then take 100 million gallons a year, but they can take up to 2 million gallons a day.
Mr. Hirsch, is that compatible with other parts of law?
Madam Chair, I think it is. I haven't reviewed the specific law that Mr. Knopf referred to, but I think the more important point is the end of that without regard to flow. That's what would really be the issue, and not so much the amount per day allowed.
So, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to hear from the gentleman that from representing the
Mr. Estes,
as to what that's going to do. Should we not get any snow?
Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, thank you for the question. Although a lot of folks probably wouldn't think it, Minnesota is actually a top third tier state based on number of skier visits. We have about 14 ski resorts, and without snowmaking, the season would be cut by about 25%. Now, based on the numbers that we were that are in the amendment before you, it would create some real problems. Snow can be made when it's when the weather conditions are right, and you sometimes get a brief window of time. Both numbers are concerning. The daily flow rate is important because if you can't make snow when the weather's cold, then you know if you're limited to just the. I'm sorry. Were we leaving the 2 million?
Right.
Daily?
Yes.
Okay, leaving that alone. Last year, the resort used about 109, I think, million gallons of water, and there is some proposed changes that could result in a slight increase in use over the next bit of time. And I believe someone mentioned that the house position, I think, is 150 million gallons. I believe we could live with 150 million gallons, but 100 would not be sufficient for what the resort needs to make.
Madam Chair, I'd just like a vote on the amendment. I think what can happen here is they can work it out in conference committee, and by then maybe they'll have a chance to discuss the issue a little bit further as well. So,
Senator Nina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two things. First, a question for Senator Goodwin, and maybe Senator Perry can chime in on this. Would you be interested in adding some language to direct the department to confer with the IRRRB to at least consult and look at possible financial options there, and as Senator Perry was talking about that. And then secondly, to the gentleman representing Lutzen, I think you've got a pretty strong argument to say that in the near term we've been drawing this water and there's no indication that it's been detrimental, although there's concerns. I think your argument that we need to go higher is a lot weaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and yes, Madam Chair, and yes, I you know, to add language in there to say that they should confer would be fine with me. We can either do that here or we could do it on the floor. But I would like to keep the language the way we've worked it out here.
Okay, Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Just to that point real quickly. So this has been going on for 40 years here, and DNR has not stepped up to do anything, and all of a sudden we're going to change this overnight here. It seems like quite a drastic change. What would be wrong with just putting a sunset on this provision of the bill, and that's going to force the issue in itself, and it's not going to put the business totally or potentially without snow. But in 2 years, they have to come back. And if that isn't a strong enough message from this committee, maybe with some of the language that Senator Nina was talking about dealing with some economic development. Gone 40 years, I think, you know, pulling the rug out from underneath them might be a little premature, but that's just a thought.
Any other comments? Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Of course, my partner right here has got me thinking now. My whole idea was to force the issue and get it done. And Senator Ingebrigtsen brings up a very good point. Should we penalize business the very first, I mean, the very first year that we're calling this to the forefront and making it an issue, or do we sunset it, or and within that time period have specific instructions that that at the end of this two-year period, we would hope that there would be an agreement with, say, a funding source like IRRRB to work as part of the economic development to help provide this water source. I don't know. I'm hearing now what Senator Ingebrigtsen says. Are we going to penalize them right out of the chute for inaction on both sides over all this, at least the last 10 years, or do we give them that opportunity, saying, "Hey, you've got 2 years to rectify this. You both have it." Just food for thought.
Senator Higgins.
And Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen and Perry, penalizing them by way of doing what? Capping it at $100 million?
Absolutely.
Potentially. We got a bed.
But
Senator Higgins?
And Madam Chair, you know, it's all weather related. We never know whether 5 gallons this winter will be plenty. You know, you want a great base so that when people ski, you know, they've got a good experience. But I think Senator Perry's on something when you're referencing the IRRRB. They love giving out economic development grants, and this would be a perfect one for them. And, you know, the resort could go there and make their case, and it would be a lot better than, I mean, we all know we don't have any money in the pots of money we get to control here. So it could be that in a few months they've got their loan and they wouldn't even need this, and they'd be ready to go by the next ski season. So I think Senator Goodman's got a good solution, and you know, we'll be seeing this one more time on the floor, and people can continue to talk. But I think what we've got is a good framework for going forward, with the cap at $100 million and the sunset, and then it gives them 2 years.
To make it clear, perhaps Mr. Bodden, have you followed all of the changes, and could you repeat them for us?
Madam Chair, I can try restating Senator Goodwin's proposed oral amendment. It would be on page 13, line 15, before pursuant, insert, and I believe the date was 2 years ahead, so we could say insert, this section expires June 30th, 2013. And then on page 13, line 21, delete $200 million and insert $100 million. The third component that has been discussed, but I'm not certain whether she wishes to include her in her amendment or not, is that final limitation on minimum flow or water level requirements. If you want to remove that, then on page 13, line 22, delete everything after purposes and delete page 13, line 23.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Any other further discussion on the amendment as proposed? If not, all in favor of Senator Goodwin's oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Nay.
It appears that the amendment does not prevail. So further discussion on the bill, or on this section of the bill. This isn't an area that we were necessarily planning to cover in this committee, but now that we're this far into it. Senator Goodwin.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'm going to try one more time. I'm going to try again to delete that entire section, and I'd like a roll call vote.
Are we ready with a roll call? I think everybody understands the issues. So we will have a roll call vote.
Senator Berglund?
Aye.
Senator Bonhoff? Senator Cohen?
Yes.
Senator Fischbach? Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
Senator Hahn?
No.
Senator Higgins?
Yes.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
No.
Senator Langseth?
No.
Senator Magnus, Senator Newman. Yep. Senator Newman?
No.
Senator Nienau?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Perry?
No.
Senator Roebling?
No. on a vote of 9-4, the amendment does not prevail. So further discussion on the bill. If there's no further discussion, I believe Senator Magnus moved the bill. I'm sorry, we didn't even get to the fiscal note. The most important reason it's here. Do we have someone here who wants to address that fiscal note? Perhaps we could have our fiscal analysts explain the fiscal note.
Madam Chair, if you would do that, please.
He's got it.
Madam Chair, members, I'll take a shot at explaining the fiscal note. Mr. Mueller can jump in if need be. The fiscal note in your packet was prepared by PCA and the Department of Administration for the Environmental Quality Board. There are costs in fiscal 2012 to both departments for rulemaking as required by the bill, and then savings to PCA in fiscal years 13 and 15 because of the change in the frequency of the permitting for solid waste disposal facilities. So they show a reduction in staff work in the second year and in 2015, and that's a reduction that's reflected in the fiscal note. So the first biennium cost or the first biennium fiscal impact to PCA is a slight savings of $3,000. There are one-time costs to the EQB at the Department of Administration of $19,000 for rulemaking. The bill does not have an appropriation for this, so the effect of the legislation would be the Department of Administration and the EQB absorbing that cost.
Does everyone understand that? Any questions? Okay, if there's no further discussion on the bill, Senator Magnus has moved that Senate File 1244 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does prevail, and the bill will be sent to the floor to the general orders calendar. Thank you, Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Going back to...
I think we're ready to take Senator Howell's bill back up, Senate File 288. The amendment is prepared.
Yes.
Senator Howell, we'll take that off the table.
Great.
They're distributing the amendment now. Senator Newman, would you like to offer the A5 amendment?
I so offer, Madam Chair.
Okay, the A5 amendment is before us. Senator Howe, would you like to explain it or have your testifier explain it?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I'd like to thank Senate Counsel for drafting this and getting this in the proper form. A lot of this amendment deals with some technical cleanup language, grammatical errors, and also the reason for this amendment is working with the Board of Dentistry and the Dental Association. I do have Gary Yockel here who would testify in regards to the changes to the bill.
Mr. Yockel, was it?
Correct.
Did you want to comment on the amendment at all?
Madam Chair, the amendment is, as Senator Howe stated, in discussions with the Minnesota Dental Association and the Minnesota Board of Dentistry. We've been working almost 2 years with the two organizations. I represent the Minnesota Dental Laboratory Association. I'm also a dental lab owner to get a bill that we have a consensus to. There were some grammatical changes in there and some changes that the Board of Dentistry would like. Some of them are a dentist. Some dentists do their own laboratory work for the patient's chair side, and there was never any intention for a dentist to have to register as a dental technician. There are several small group practices that might have four or five dentists, and they have their own lab technician, and they would be under the direction of the dentist. It's not a commercial laboratory. They only do dental work for those four or five dentists in that practice. And then some of the other things are clear up a date. The start date would be in April 1st of 2012, and some grammatical changes.
And also the appropriations.
And the appropriations would be the last 1.25 page 4, line 19, delete that there's just a blank and put in $165,000.
It's funded by the...
Thank you.
And that will be funded by the laboratories themselves through registration.
So are there any questions about the A5 amendment? Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, only the very first amendment, which is changing something from an include to a does not include. Senator Howe, am I correct in interpreting this as taking care of the situation with the dentists in their offices who make their own crowns and things?
Senator Howe?
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, correct. That is exactly right.
Okay. I have two of those, Madam Chair. Two of those crowns made right at the chair side.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Newman has moved the amendment. If there's no other questions on the A5 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. So on the bill, and Senator Howe, just a brief definition, and then we will look at the fiscal note as well. If we can have an explanation, I understand there's a fee. It's generating potentially $165,000.
The fee that is set not to exceed $300,000 will take care of what the board feels they need to oversee the registry program. But I do have Gary Yaku here to explain the essence of the bill here just briefly.
Mr. Yaku.
Madam Chair, Senators, thank you very much. Good afternoon now. My name's Gary Yaku, and I own Dimension Dental Design, a dental laboratory in Hastings, Minnesota. I'm also the Vice President of the Minnesota Dental Laboratory Association, and I have the pleasure of sitting on the Board of Directors for the National Association of Dental Laboratories. And the bill in front of you today is about safety, patient, dentist, staff, and technician safety. Currently, according to industry representatives, there are between 400 and 500 dental labs in Minnesota. And if there was ever a product recall or safety problem, neither our association, our dental suppliers, or the state, has a way to make sure that all the labs are notified. There is no one clearinghouse. This bill would provide for labs to register with the Minnesota Board of Dentistry. It would also require technicians to have at least 8 hours of training every 2 years, and that includes an infection control by the Center for Disease Control Standards and OSHA standards. Laboratories must provide a country of origin and a material content sheet to the dentist for the patient records. And we've worked with the Minnesota Board of Dentistry and the Minnesota Dental Association, to come up with a consensus for this bill. Currently, there are 9 states that have some form of regulation, some for over 20 years, whether it was in Texas or South Carolina. And there are another 9 states with pending regulations. And as I mentioned, this bill is about safety, patient safety, safety for the dentist, for their staff, and for technicians. And I would appreciate your support of this bill. Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there anything in here that has anything to do with impacted wisdom teeth?
Madam Chair, Senator, No, but we can talk about that later.
That's the legitimate use of the word, however. Thank you.
Is it what?
Impact.
It's a word impact. To another bill.
Are there any other questions? I see that you did change this. Senator Howard indicated to me earlier that he wasn't sure of if the amount would be generating too much revenue or not, so we're leaving it up to the board by putting in may not exceed $300 for the license. Is that correct?
Correct, Madam Chair.
So they would be able to reduce that without coming back to the legislature if they're generating too much revenue for this account?
Correct.
And I see we have someone else here potentially to testify. Would you?
Yeah, absolutely, Madam Chair.
Madam Chairman, I'm Dominic Spizzetto. I'm a contract lobbyist. I'm representing the Minnesota Dental Association. This bill addresses a concern that the dentists have had, have discussed with the labs, and I even believe the Board of Dentistry is concerned about sending work orders out for dental appliances, things like crowns or dentures. And some of those are actually now being sent to China and other countries, and where there is a concern about the materials that's used, whether it's safe, whether it's appropriate for that particular type of appliance. And so this would engender the need for a material information sheet, which would be provided by the dental lab to the dentist, and it would explain the materials used and the country of origin in which those materials were brought and where it was actually fabricated, and then that would be placed in the patient record. So there would be transparency involved in that transaction. And for that reason, the Dental Association is here supporting this legislation.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill? Mr. Yacko, did you have a final comment?
I would just like to say that this bill would be a patient safety. Some look at it as more regulation. But if you have to have the person that cuts your hair or a plumber or an electrician has more regulation and more factors involved with the state than something that could go into your mouth. So the Lab Association wants to step up and make sure that when things are being placed in patients' mouths that they're safe, that the person doing it is well trained, and they're trained in infection control proceedings and other laboratory proceedings. So it's a safety bill not only for patients but also for the dentists and their staff, so they're receiving properly infected or disinfected, excuse me, appliances, and that the dental labs or technicians are trained appropriately.
Okay, thank you. There's no further questions. Senator Berglund moves that Senate file 288 be recommended to pass and be sent to the floor.
As amended.
Oh, as amended. Yes, as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail, and the Senate File 288 will be placed on general orders.
Thank you very much.
And members, our next bill is promising to take a lot of time. And so I think we are going to take a short recess for members to maybe grab a little bit to eat. But I really want to be back here like at 1 o'clock. So 15 minutes, stretch your legs.
Madam Chair.
Get a little break. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
I wasn't expecting to go over more than 15 minutes, so I don't know.
News for you.
We can wish. We can wish. But I think we probably will need a break before we get into it. So we'll be back here at 1 o'clock.
But such a wide-eyed optimist.
We didn't do Burlock or Gimsy yet either. We have three.
No, that's right. We've got liquor,
what are we gonna do with yours?
Legacy, and Transpo. Right? We've got this, we've got liquor, and we've got
Claire.
This one's pretty.
Claire.
Yes.
Yeah, right. All right.
We're going to do the liquor.
I have to
wait till the train comes
through. I just didn't know if I needed to do my.
If you've got the head, there probably are other pages.
Right. I'm going to put till 8 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. We'll be fine.
Okay, cool. I just needed to know if I had to make a phone call.